Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Good morning and you're very welcome to the programme. Today, former Assistant Garda Commissioner John O'Driscoll died suddenly last month. Well, today his brother Donal reflects on his legacy and the book he wrote about his life's work. Why the coroner's service in Ireland might be about to change, Brian O'Connell reports. Concerns in Europe and in the United States as North Korea tests another intercontinental ballistic missile. Already a kitsch TV classic, Jilly Cooper's Rivals, has grabbed the headlines for its steamy scenes. But what about the music? Well, we'll spin the 80s discs from the hit show a little bit later on. And on Halloween, we say go to hell. We're going to learn about the surprising role of cursing and curses in medieval Ireland. You can WhatsApp us this morning, 0870 32 32 32. Text us this morning on 51551. You can also email the programme todaycb@rte.ie. First though, 3 days of mourning with at least 95 people dead, while a major rescue effort is underway in Spain to find the large numbers of people who are still missing after the floods. Rivers burst their banks, streets were flooded, bridges collapsed and cars, often with drivers inside them, were pushed along by the water. Karen Loftus was trapped in Spain's floods with her husband. She told Sky News how a trucker came to their rescue.
Well, we were just here, just driving along. All of a sudden, all of the traffic came to a halt. We then heard that a bridge had gone down not far in front of us. Lorries had been swept away. People were absolutely panic stricken. So it happened so quickly. We made the decision to get out of the car. I didn't know at 62 I could climb out of a car window into raging torrents, but I did. And then we managed to get across and over a big wall onto the other side, where a fantastic Moroccan lorry driver called Fadil picked us up. And he was so brave. He absolutely saved us. I don't know what we would have done without him. He had a huge articulated lorry and he basically drove through about 5 foot of water and we managed to escape. But I genuinely don't know what would have happened to us if he hadn't have been there.
That's Karen Loftus. And forecasters are warning more torrential rain is on the way for some of the worst hit areas. Well, to give us an update on what's happening on the ground, I'm joined now by Sarah Morris, freelance journalist based in Spain. Good morning, Sarah.
Good morning, Claire.
So the rains we know have subsided, at least for now, but the gravity of the devastation is becoming clearer. Can you tell us how the search and rescue operation is going this morning?
Well, basically, we have over 1,000 soldiers that have joined local forces, local police and volunteers. And the priority, says the Defence Minister, Margarita Robles, is to find any survivors. Now, in Valencia, the worst hit region where we've already got over 95 people confirmed dead, the authorities there think they have rescued everybody who was on a rooftop who is visible from the air, because they, of course, are more visible. Helicopters and planes flew over. But the mud and the rubble in much cases and the coast piled up cars makes it difficult to see and to get to people who might be on the ground and recover those bodies. We know that there are forensic scientists that have been deployed from across Spain to help, along with 50 mobile morgues, because many of the authorities are saying that they are not optimistic about finding many people who have survived.
And clearly access to the worst affected areas is a huge problem. I'm just looking at photographs here of this motorway near Valencia. I mean, it's just extraordinary. There are cars piled up on top of each other. There is mud and debris. So access clearly is still a major issue.
It is. There's more than 120 roads that are still cut off, and thousands of cars piled up or stopped on many roads. That will be a priority for the authorities to be able to get into villages and towns that have been inaccessible. In Valencia, the head of the government there is saying, please, people should not be out in their cars using those lanes that have been opened up for the emergency services. They have to take priority. And there is still rain forecast in places. There are weather warnings that there could be, for instance, on the eastern coast, the province of Castellón will receive 180 litres per square metre. That, of course, puts it on that top alert, the red alert, and that means people still have to be very careful there. In the northeast of Spain, they're also expecting rain in the south, in Andalusia, particularly in Cádiz, and even in Extremadura. So people are being told to be very careful indeed.
Now, there are reports that local authorities in Valencia, Sarah, are having to issue warnings about false information relating to the quality of local water supplies. What have you been hearing about this?
That's right. It seems that some people the worst is coming out in them, and they've been putting out false claims on the media. A lot of that has been dismissed. It is true that there are people who have got their electricity cut off, however, and it is difficult for people who've had all their cars smashed up in towns to actually leave to get food. And so that is the priority, getting resources into those areas as fast as possible to re-establish normality.
I'm sure it's impossible at this stage to count the cost of this, not least in human lives, but also we see these pictures this morning of people trying to rescue their belongings from flooded apartments and from their homes. But in terms of industry, we're hearing that thousands of vines and crops across the agricultural land have been uprooted. Industries such as agriculture, other businesses, are they beginning to count the cost of these floods at this stage?
People are certainly talking about it, Claire, as to having lost whole businesses and their homes, their livelihoods, just basically swept away by these rivers overnight. There is some funding that is supposed to be opened up straight away. The Valencia president has talked about 250 million euros, and he said there'll be no bureaucracy to that. He's saying anyone affected should get 6,000 euros each. But obviously, there will be some delays in people being able to claim from their insurance companies, even be able to tap money. The European Union has promised, Josep Borrell said yesterday, that there would be funds available through its disaster service. But really, they can't arrive soon enough. And one of the big questions now, Claire, is really, could lives have been saved if the alerts and the various bodies set up to protect people, if they had been better coordinated? Some people saying that they got an alert on their phone at about 8:15 on the Tuesday night, despite the state's meteorological agency knowing there would be heavy rainfall and giving advice to other agencies from about 24 hours before that.
Right, and those questions will continue to be asked. Sarah, thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Well, when an event like this happens, we often ask ourselves, can it be linked to climate change? Well, in summer of 2003, a devastating heat wave killed more than 70,000 people across Europe. And scientists found that this was the first undeniable evidence that climate change was not an abstract and distant threat in the future, but a reality claiming the lives of people here and now. And a new study by the World Weather Attribution Group marks 20 years since it first linked the role of climate change to a weather event. It found that climate change made the 10 deadliest extreme weather catastrophes over the past two decades worse, contributing to the deaths of more than 570,000 people. John Sweeney, Emeritus Professor at Maynooth University and climatologist, joins me on the line now. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Claire.
So, John, following an extreme weather event, people often ask, don't they, is climate change to blame here? And this report tells us that it is.
Yes, I mean, attribution studies have kind of revolutionised our appreciation of the role of climate change over the past few years. In the old days, when you could only run one climate model, for example, there was always a great deal of uncertainty. But with advances in computer science, this group in particular can now run models hundreds of times, and they can tweak the model to say, well, let's run this model with pre-industrial levels of greenhouse gases, and let's run it again 100 times with current levels. How much more likely is an event, say, for example, like we had in Spain this week, how much more likely is that due to our increase in greenhouse gas concentrations? And that kind of result they have replicated for many studies, in this case for the 10 most severe studies of the past 20 years. And the evidence that comes out is pretty conclusive. The debate is now over in terms of the role of climate change in intensifying extreme events. There's a fingerprint of climate change in almost every one. And the takeaway lesson that they're trying to get across is now, let's move on from that now. Let's look at what we need to do to avoid these events killing people in great numbers in the years to come.
So it also helps communicate the message. It helps it get that message through to all of us who are watching these weather events unfold, that climate change has a role, as you say, a fingerprint in all of these very serious and deadly incidents.
It does. And, you know, they have quantified in each of those 10 severe cases the number of excess deaths that have occurred, the number of people that have died from drought or cyclone disasters or heat waves, which have been enhanced by climate change. And they themselves would say, well, that figure we gave you of 500,000, that's a vast underestimate, because in many developing countries, you don't register heat wave deaths, for example. We also don't register deaths from things like vectors, diseases that may be associated with the movement of climate belts further polewards. So it's an estimate, of course, based on the past 20 years' events. We were 0.6 degrees cooler 20 years ago. So if anything, it's a vast underestimate of what is lying ahead for us.
So it points the way, and you mentioned this earlier, what should we be doing now? And one of the elements when we look at all of that is about readiness, about getting prepared for these types of events. And vulnerability, we know, worsens the impact of extreme weather events. But when something like what we've seen in Spain this week happens, it's a developed country, when it has the kind of impact that it did, it does beg the question if anywhere can ever be prepared enough for these events, John.
Yes, I mean, many of your listeners will be very familiar with the area around Valencia, the area of eastern Spain there, which is one of the driest areas in Europe. But it's in a developed, sophisticated country. And the realization that you can have around 100 deaths or more in that kind of situation does make us sit up and say, well, how can we avoid this in the future? Is it going to come home to roost here in Ireland as well? And in the case of many of those events that this study has looked at, of course, communication has been the key, early warning has been the key, but also attribution has been the key. Can we prepare for what we think is coming down the line with more defensive measures, with protection for areas that are vulnerable, with protection for vulnerable populations? And of course, there's two sides to this. We can do all we can in terms of improving communication and adaptation to what's coming, but we also need to realise that unless we tackle the problem at source through reducing our greenhouse gas emissions, then all of those will come to naught in the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So this study is more or less emphasising that as a takeaway message that, of course, it's in the lead up to COP29, but it's a takeaway message that, if we want to avoid these in the future, we have to do a lot more in terms of protection. And one important aspect, which this study, for example, doesn't really tackle, is the expansion of areas suitable for pathogens and disease vectors to move in. So, we're going to face, even in Europe, increased problems of West Nile virus, of dengue, of leishmaniasis and so on. And those are issues which are going to magnify the climate effect further. Climate is the great multiplier of existing threats. And this study, I think, more or less exemplifies that too. And we've seen it, of course, in Spain this week as well, tragically.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned there that when this study began in 2003, well, since then, we have warmed by another 0.6 of a degree. We are warming still further. So we can be pretty sure, can we, that there is worse to come?
There is. We know from the build-up to COP29 that global emissions increased again last year. So, you know, we're not making progress in this problem. Even within Ireland, we're not really facing up to meeting our own carbon budgets. So one of the interesting studies that has come out in the past week or two has been, well, how many extra people die for every ton of carbon dioxide we put into the atmosphere? And one of the studies in Nature, a very respected magazine, a public journal rather, suggests that for every 4,000 tons of carbon dioxide, we shorten the life of one person over the course of the next 75 years. And that's quite sobering if you think of Ireland's 60 million tons of greenhouse gases. We therefore, in that scale of things, would be responsible for shortening the life of 13,500 people from our own emissions globally as well. So, you know, it's a sobering thought that we have to build in the cost of carbon. The social cost of carbon is going to be, for the economists at least, much, much greater than they have hitherto thought.
Yeah, it's an extraordinary figure. Just to come back to Spain for a minute, this Spanish acronym for High Altitude Isolated Depression, DANA, D-A-N-A. Now, we're told that's what to blame for what we've seen in Spain over the last couple of days. Can you explain that to us, John?
Yes, I mean, over the past few days, we in Ireland, you probably have been aware, have been enjoying unseasonably warm weather, unseasonably settled weather, not the kind of weather you associate with the end of October. And that's because we've had a big fat anticyclone sitting over us. But the impact of that has been to distort the jet stream, which normally passes across us. And what has happened is the jet stream has bifurcated, and part of it has gone into southern Spain and has set up a closed circuit, rather like an oxbow lake in a river. And this cold circulation has remained almost stationary over southeastern Spain. So you have cold air high up in the atmosphere, and of course you've got warm air down below. So you have the ingredients, if you like, for huge amounts of air moving up and causing great amounts of rainfall to develop. So huge thunderstorms, 20,000 lightning strikes in Spain over that 48-hour period, huge amounts of rainfall, a year's rainfall in a matter of a day in many parts of Spain. But of course, it's enhanced further by the warmth of the Mediterranean offshore. It's 22 degrees or so in the Mediterranean, and that brings warm, moist air into that uplift situation, which has caused what the Spanish refer to as a DANA, a kind of recipe for extremely heavy rainfall. And there's one interesting figure just to leave you before we go, and that is that the rainfall in Middleton last year in Cork was about 100 millimetres over 36 hours. The poor unfortunates in Spain have had 164 millimetres in 1 hour. Right. So it's not surprising we've had these tragic consequences.
Yes, and the recovery continues. John, thank you very much for your time this morning. That's John Sweeney there, who's Emeritus Professor at Maynooth University. Coming up next on the programme, as another mortgage provider cuts its rates, will customers begin benefiting from greater competition in the mortgage market?
Text 51551 today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.